Thanks for listening to the Wellspring Church Podcast.
Hey, thanks so much for joining us this weekend. We are wrapping up a series today we've been in for the last few weeks called Headspace. And in fact, we have so much great content that I want to share with you today. We're going to dive right in. And so if this is your first week and you haven't been a part of this series, I'm going to highly encourage you download our app so that you can go back and catch up, because we've covered a ton of great stuff and I really think it's going to be helpful. But today I want to move forward because there's one more question that I want us to answer as a church. And it's a question that I know some of people in our church and some of the people who have been watching this series have been waiting for us to address since we started. Because we've been talking about mental health. We've been talking about Jesus wants to give us life to the fullest. We've been talking about steps we can take to be mentally healthy. We've been talking about, you know, taking walks and going to counseling and all these steps we can find to live life to the fullest. And I know there's one group of people that have been watching and waiting and wondering, when is he going to talk about me? And that's what I want to talk about today, because I understand when it comes to mental health, yes, for some of us, there are small steps we can take and we find ourselves healthy again. For others, there are steps we take of going to counseling and maybe even some short-term medication, and then we find ourselves back to how we were before. But there's a group of people that live in our church and in our world who, for them, mental health isn't a quick fix. Mental health isn't something that they can just go and get solved. Mental health is something that they manage, and it's something they will continue to manage for the rest of their lives, be it because of something they were born with, a chemical imbalance, or something that happened to them that was so traumatic that it left an indelible mark on their souls. People that struggle with addiction, these aren't things that they ever just get to wipe their hands of and say they're done with. They are struggles and issues that will walk with them in their lives. And to them, I want to say, God has an answer for you. Because I know you're wondering, hey, if Jesus promises life to the fullest, and I believe in Jesus, and I'm pursuing life to the fullest, why is this still a thing I struggle with? Why isn't this thing gone away? Why hasn't it been healed? It's a very valid question, and it's such a valid question that God saw fit to give us an answer, a direct answer through a man named Paul. Now, we talk about Paul a lot here at Wellspring because Paul was a missionary of the early church. He wrote about half of what we call the New Testament. He would go to new towns. He would start churches, and he would write those churches letters to teach them what it meant to follow Jesus. He was literally a founder of our faith. And what you may not know is that Paul actually had a lifelong struggle. And in his letter to the church at Corinth, actually the second letter, in 2 Corinthians, Paul talks about this struggle, and he calls it a thorn in the flesh. Now, we don't really know much about this thorn in the flesh. Scholars have debated for years what the thorn in the flesh was. Some believe it was a skin condition. Others believe that it was a severe speech impediment. There are scholars that think that Paul was talking about severe mental struggles, that he was suffering from severe depression, that he was suffering with severe anxiety. One of the leading scholars on Paul and on 2 Corinthians says this about the thorn in the flesh, and I think it sets us up perfectly for where we're going today. Here's what he says. He says, the ambiguity about what Paul's thorn in the flesh might be allows others to identify their own personal thorns with Paul's and to appropriate the theological lesson. Now, here's what that means. That means when Paul talks about his thorn in the flesh, which he does, and it means when Jesus responds to Paul's thorn in the flesh struggle, which he does, and we're going to look at it in just a moment, what God is doing by leaving that thorn in the flesh ambiguous is he is inviting us in to Paul's answer. He is inviting us to identify with Paul's lifelong struggle, and he is inviting us to receive Jesus' answer to Paul's lifelong struggle, a lifelong struggle of something that he manages every day, that he deals with every day, that interferes with him. And here was Paul's number one fear about his thorn in the flesh. His number one fear was this struggle, whatever it was going to impact his ability to serve Jesus. Paul knew he had been called by Jesus to take his message to the world. He knew he had been called to be a missionary, and Paul was terrified that this thorn in his flesh, that this struggle, was going to disqualify him from the ability to serve. And that's why we're told in 2 Corinthians, he prayed these words. He tells us that three times I begged the Lord to take it away. Paul says three times he begged Jesus, whatever the struggle was, to please take it away, to please get rid of it, to please remove it from his life, to please heal me. And the reason Paul wanted to be healed, there's nothing wrong with asking for healing, there's nothing wrong for asking to be set free, but the reason Paul wanted it is because he was afraid the thorn disqualified him from service. And I wonder, for those of us that see mental health not as a short-term struggle, but a lifelong journey, I wonder if anyone's ever whispered in our ear that we are disqualified from service until we get better. Has that ever happened? Have you ever looked at your struggle? Have you ever looked at your burden, at your hardship, and said, man, I'll be a great mom when this is gone. I'll be a great dad once I finally conquered this. I'll be able to serve God. I'll be a great employee. I'll be a great boss once this is gone. So God, please remove it. If that's you, that's exactly where Paul was, because he was afraid the struggle disqualified him from service. And the reason we're looking at this entire passage today is because we are invited to identify not only with Paul's struggle, but to identify with Jesus' response. Paul had a struggle that he thought disqualified him, and if you have a struggle that you think disqualifies you, here is what Jesus says back. Paul says, each time he asked to take it away, each time Jesus responded, my grace is all you need. My power works best in weakness. You know what Jesus said to Paul? And you know what Jesus would say to you? The only thing you need to serve me is me. Jesus was saying to Paul, I see that struggle. I know you have that struggle. My power works best when you trust me in that struggle. I'm not waiting for you to get your act together and get better. That's not how I work. I came into your life in this moment. I have a plan for you, and I want to move in you and through you to change the world around you. Your struggle doesn't scare me. That is what Jesus would say, and what he would even say, what he says to Paul, he would say to us, he says, and if you let me, I can turn that struggle into a strength. You have no idea what I can do through a life fully devoted to me. And that's really what I want us to focus on today. As we wrap up the series on mental health, as we deal with the fact that sometimes there are going to be struggles that we will wrestle with forever, and we may be afraid that those struggles are going to limit our ability to serve God, and we may beg him to take them away and say, we can't move forward until they're gone. He says, no. I've equipped you. I prepared you. You can do exactly what I want you to do as long as you invite me in. Because my grace is sufficient. My kindness is sufficient. My goodness is sufficient. And part of that goodness, part of that grace is giving us counselors that we can go to who understand how our minds work. Part of that grace is teaching people how brain chemistry works so that we can take medications so that we can learn to manage those struggles. Part of that grace is tapping into a church prepared to walk with you for the long haul. And that's who we are, and that's what we want to be. So what I want us to do today, again, as we understand this idea of the struggle, this idea of the thorn in the flesh, first I want to take you to an interview we did with two local counselors to talk about what this entire process looks like. And then we're going to end today with a story of a young lady in our church, a story of a young lady who found a thorn in her flesh and how God is moving through her to do more than she could ask or imagine. So let's check it out. All right. Well, as I said, we're going to have another conversation today with two more experts in mental health. We have Bruce and Mandy. I want to thank you both for being here. Bruce, you're actually a Wellspringer.
I am.
And I'm really, really honored you guys are here talking about finding freedom in mental health struggles, finding freedom in mental health challenges. But kind of before we dive in, why don't you both share a little bit about how you got into this professionally, what drew you into the mental health field, and how that's kind of affected your faith as you've learned, you know, how God can help us in these struggles.
Well, my name is Mandy Mitchell. I'm a licensed clinical social worker at the center. I specialize in seeing couples. And what's funny is I was actually pre-law and worked in a family law firm and decided I would rather be on the other side of it.
Yes.
And so here I am now, and I am certified in Gottman therapy, and so it's my passion, and it's what I love. I believe it's the relationships in our world that keep us together, and that's what's brought me closer to my faith, absolutely, is that trust in God, that relationship with God, and how I can do that, use that with my relationships with people in my life.
I'm Bruce Lynch. I got in a roundabout way into the profession. I had my own personal struggles in high school, college, with depression, alcohol, other mood-altering substances, which led me to, by the age of 24, homeless, jobless, friendless, faithless. Then some doors opened. I was offered some assistance. I accepted that assistance and haven't looked back since. How it's been interesting because I've been in the other seat. And it wasn't until 2007 I took my first job in the helping profession, working for the County Alcohol and Drug Abuse Commission. And how it's increased my faith. I get to see daily how God works in people's lives. I get to see lives restored. I get to see relationships restored. I get to see life come back in the eyes of people. You know, they come in into drug treatment facilities. I've worked at the jail. I've worked at homeless shelters. You just see life come back into their eyes. And it's good to, it's also reaffirming when they share their faith, how they couldn't see how they would get through something, and now they got through it and they attribute it to God. It's reaffirming.
So Bruce, thank you for sharing that. And that actually leads into part of this conversation, because one of the goals of this series is to remove the stigma around asking for help, the stigma around needing help. You know, you said helped. So my question, I guess, for both of you is, and for the people watching at home, when someone comes to your office, when they meet with you, when they ask for help, does it ever cross your mind to see that as a weakness?
Never.
Right.
I had to learn my own self. I mean, I was offered help. I accepted help. And I had to learn in my mid-20s that asking for help is a sign of independence. You know, up until that point, I thought, you know, it was dependent. I can do this on my own. I'm self-sufficient. And it took a change in thinking to go, no, asking for help is a sign of insight, awareness that I can't do this on my own efforts. I see that God uses our struggles to show his presence, to show his power. You know, if we got along just fine, we might not have to rely on him. And so, I was pretty much, my self-will had to be crumbled so I would start to rely and depend upon God's will in my life, and it's been much better on this side.
I think that relying on God's will and then having the strength and the humility to ask for help, I think is part of showing our self-reliance, right? Part of showing the way that we are able to move within this world with one another, even though we might be having challenges, we might be struggling, knowing that everyone else has those same challenges and struggles. It just might look a little bit different for each one of us.
So you're right. Struggles, they look different for everyone. And one of the questions I think people at home and we're wrestling with right now, especially as we're kind of ending this series is, how do we know where we fall on the mental health struggle spectrum? Mm. You know, is our mental health struggle something that, you know, we can solve ourselves through some self-care, through some counseling? Or is our mental health struggle going to be one that we're going to have to manage the rest of our lives? Mm-hmm. How do people know the difference?
So there are, if we are talking about diagnosing differences, mm-hmm. there are things called adjustment disorders. They're mm-hmm. temporary conditions due to situational factors, circumstances, things of that nature. You've already made a reference. You lose a loved one. Well, it's natural to feel sad. It's to feel grief, to mourn. That's 100% natural. There, but then there are other conditions that are chronic conditions that, because of genetic predisposition, because of trauma in one's life, it changes the structure of the brain. It changes the chemical imbalance in the brain. And those things may be more persistent and will just need lifelong care, just like you've made reference to. Diabetes, other health conditions. Well, mental health conditions are no different. The way I like to look at it, I came back from, I was fortunate to get up to the mountains for a little bit over the summer. And coming back through Asheville, it was a torrential downpour. I had to slow down. We were going 15, 20 miles per hour on I-40. It was a temporary condition, you know, so I look at mental health conditions as being an adjustment. I had to slow down for a little while, but eventually the rain stopped and we were able to pick back up on our own efforts. Then there's other times I use a tow truck analogy. Mm. Our cars work just fine until we end up in the ditch. And then we need a tow truck. And I look at that like being, you know, that's where we need extra assistance to get out of that ditch so we can get back on the road and carry on our own efforts. But sometimes we can't do it. I can't get my car out of the ditch if it's in there. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the way I try to set it up. So, mm-hmm. okay, which one is this? Is this mm-hmm. just a temporary condition? Or has this been persistent more than weeks, more than several months? Or is it reoccurring? Mm-hmm. Sometimes mm-hmm. depression, anxiety, you can be fine for a little while, and then all of a sudden a season, you know, we talk about seasonal affective disorder. So any number of things can trigger some of that stuff. Mm-hmm. But reaching out for medication, asking, you know, talking to a therapist, consulting a physician or psychiatrist, and that's where, again, we have this cluster of symptoms that we can, okay, well, this might work for that.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's because we know ourselves best, mm-hmm. typically, right? Or the people that are closest to us, they know us. And so when we can really see the way our functioning is changing, I mean, thinking about your analogies, mm-hmm. if you're stuck in a ditch, you're not functioning the way that you typically would. Right. And so that can always be a sign of maybe I need a little bit of help. I'm not reacting or responding to things mm-hmm. the way that I typically would.
Yeah.
And so that can be a sign for us that maybe I need a little bit of help. Maybe I need a lot of help.
Mm-hmm.
Depends upon what's going on. And just like Bruce had talked about, some things are temporary. And mm-hmm. I know with my clients, I talk about that a lot, is in our life, everything is actually temporary. And that kind of helps to compartmentalize things a little bit mm-hmm. so that we're just taking little pieces at a time, little things that we work on a little bit at a time. Because when we start talking about lifelong care, gosh, that's scary,
right?
That's a really scary thought.
Mm-hmm.
And so we think about, let's just get out of the ditch.
Right.
How are we going to get out of the ditch? We'll worry about mm-hmm. the rest of the road when we get on the road.
So I love that analogy. And I want to take it one step further, really put legs on it. Because what I can hear at home is everyone is now saying, oh yeah, I'm just on I-40 and it's raining really hard and I'm slowing down.
Mm-hmm.
No one wants to admit they're in the ditch.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
In real life, we know we're in a ditch.
Mm-hmm.
And when we're in a ditch, guess what? We may have a best friend, but a walk's not going to solve that. You have to call an expert to get you out of the ditch. So, mm-hmm. practically speaking, what are some symptoms, I guess we could say, for people at home, how can they differentiate, yeah, I'm just on I-40 and I'm having to slow down, or, you know what, I'm in a ditch.
Mm-hmm.
But what are some things they can look for?
Just what Mandy said, and you've made a reference to in a previous sermon, that it's affecting activities of daily life, your relationships, your health, your job, your recreation. You just can't find some time to just relax. When it's starting to have negative effects in those areas of life and you, on your own efforts, don't feel you can change it, And again, you know, we look at, or I look at families as a system. It's a family systems approach. Everybody affects everybody. And just like Mandy, I think relationships are vital and they have the biggest influence on one's mental health. So when it's, you're starting to see it affect your relationships in a negative manner, that's the time to, okay, something's going on here. And again, it could be support groups online. It could be 12-step groups, either online or in person. It could be therapy. It could be counseling, online counseling, telehealth. It could be, you know, a circle group. It could be anything. But, you know, I find that the enemy works on us best in isolation. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. If he can get us separated and we're in the social distancing time, that we're isolated from a lot of our typical activities, that's where he gets us best. You know, I can't tell anybody. I got to keep it a secret. You know, you're only as sick as your secrets in the recovery groups they talk about. That's where he can do his best work. Versus, okay, reaching out, talking to somebody, a competent professional, a trusted advisor, it can help break that cycle.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think, what is the harm in asking for help, even if you're not sure, right? Mm-hmm. Even if you're thinking, maybe I've got this, but I don't know. So maybe talk with someone and they can give you a couple of extra tips or let you know that this is going to be okay, or maybe this is a little bigger than what we thought it was. And so if you're unsure, if you're doing everything Bruce had said and you're trying to put all of these things into place, but it's still not feeling your normal, whatever that might be, because it's so individual, talk with somebody anyway. Mm-hmm. What's it going to hurt?
So here's what it's going to hurt. It's going to embarrass me. Mm-hmm. It's going to be shame. It's going to cause shame. Mm-hmm. So how do you respond to that? Because that's what people are thinking. It's going to be embarrassing to reach out. It's going to have to admit something's wrong with me. Mm-hmm. So how do we get them past that first thought to the second thought of, but it'll be better on the other side?
That barrier, right. We always get in our own way.
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
We do. And I think part of it is trust.
Yeah.
And that, I think that's part of where the faith comes in of, yes, this is going to feel really uncomfortable at first. Mm-hmm. But if I have faith and trust that if I follow down this path, I will and can feel better and function better.
Yeah.
I think the other thing, too, is when we get to the point of realizing something isn't right, our functioning is changing, like I said. And so there may have already been things that have happened that might already be causing that shame, might already be causing embarrassment.
Right.
And so maybe it's a way out of that feeling.
Right. Well, it's also, as we started talking, I'm thinking, like, you hear so many people talk about rock bottom. Rock bottom, it means like the shame is gone and you have no choice. And so what I guess what I would add as a non-professional is like, ask for help now to avoid hitting rock bottom. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Because you've seen people at rock bottom and you've seen people that ask for help before rock bottom.
Mm-hmm.
Before rock bottom is probably better.
I would say. It's a lot easier climb.
Well, we use comparison unsuccessfully at times. You know, if I get this bad, you know, that hasn't happened yet. I haven't lost this yet. You know, there's a lot of not yets.
Yes.
So don't wait till you've checked off all the not yets.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, okay, well, you know, it's affecting my relationship here. Research statistics, early intervention. The sooner we can start, just you use medical and cold. Sooner you can start taking medication for a cold or something of that nature, the sooner you get better.
Yeah.
The less severe that problem gets. So early intervention is key, and that's part of this series, is just bringing up awareness. Thinking about just demystifying that process a little bit. I mean, counseling, therapy, it can seem daunting to somebody walking in. But at the end of the day, all a therapist or a counselor can do is offer some information. Obviously, they've been trained, they have a license, they've had the education, they've worked with hundreds or thousands of individuals by this point. The good thing about human, we are all more alike than we are different. We all kind of want the same thing. We all, you know, one, it's how we go about it's different, but because that's a study of human behavior, we can work with different things. I mean, one of the things is, thinking if there's a name for it, that means somebody else has done it. And sometimes that will get us in that shame, you know, and having a trusted advisor, having a therapist to kind of share some of the past trauma, like right now with the COVID and the social distancing and all the changes that we've had to endure and work through and process, all that stuff in the past has just been exacerbated. You know, I noticed, and I supervise a new therapist as well, and I noticed they work a little bit more with adolescents than I work with, It seemed like March, April, into about mid-May, everybody was persevering. Everybody's like, yeah, we got this. And then about mid-May, you know, the anxiety started to come up. The exacerbation of some other underlying conditions started to come. And that's kind of persisted throughout the summer. And I'm interested to see how things go in, you know, as people go back to school, depending on what that looks like for everybody. And that's the part that I think just demystifying the counseling process. It's okay to step in. We can just share some information. You can get an appraisal or assessment of where you are.
Do you find that most of the time everyone else in a person's life knows they're in a ditch before they do?
I would say more often than not.
More often than not.
Not always. What would you say?
Depending on what the issue is.
Exactly.
It depends on what the issue is.
Some people can wear the mask for a while.
Well, and I mean, just in that, family members are typically concerned, I don't want to say anything, I don't want to make it worse, I don't want to upset the relationship. You know, about how to approach a family member if you see somebody struggling. I shared a little bit, you know, my brother came to me in a very caring, non-judgmental tone, just asked me if I was tired or if I wanted some help. And it had no other motives to it. I always talk about, you know, a lot of times if we have loved ones or somebody in our family or a close friend who is really struggling, we can start to get angry. We can start to, you know, resent because why can't they do this? Why do they keep doing this? Why won't they get help? And I find if we can, okay, just take a moment, step back, try to step into their shoes for a second, try to figure out what they actually, what their daily life experience is, regardless of the issue. It's like, how is this affecting their life? If you can step into their shoes, show some compassion, like, wow, it must be a real struggle for them daily just to get out of bed. It must be a real struggle daily just to avoid the temptation of, it offers, you know, you can kind of dispel anger by cultivating love, by offering that compassion. And that changes the dynamics between the two. And that changes the communication between the two. Where, you know, you have, sometimes, you know, it's timing, waiting for that opportune time to, you know, wouldn't you like things to be better? You know, I'm so sorry to see that you have to struggle with this daily. Mm-hmm. Okay. It's very non-judgmental. It's very open.
And that's grace, right?
Grace.
When we stand in their shoes and are able to get a different perspective and still provide that benefit of the doubt, that grace of life is hard, it must be hard, instead of judgment.
So guys, thank you for being here. And as we sort of try to wind this down, I still want to address one kind of specific group, and I want to provide some hope, because, you know, the analogy we've used is we could be on I-40 and it rains, we have to slow down. We could even drive our car into a ditch and we need a professional to get us out. But for most of us, if we drive our car into a ditch, the professor gets us out, we drive away and we don't think about the ditch again. For some people, their mental health struggles, the chemical imbalances, the deep trauma, even if they get out of the ditch, they're going to have to live with that ditch every day. They're going to have to see it every day. How do we give them hope that they too can move forward into the full life Jesus offers when all they're seeing is, man, if I take a step, I'm still going to have to deal with this every single day?
I think part of it is remembering is that you're never back on that road by yourself, right? There's always going to be someone that's there with you. There's a team of people that's there with you. You know, people have talked about safety rails, guardrails to keep you on that road, and you're a part of building those guardrails, and so there are things that you want in place that you're comfortable with. And also it's not who you are. I think that's the hard thing. People start to feel like that's what's going to define me. I'm going to be living under this shadow forever, and it's really not. It's just something that becomes a part of who you are, that you live alongside of. And it isn't in the forefront. It can just be something that's in the back, like getting gray hair. It's just there. It's not going to impact every single day, but you know it's there, and you just kind of move along in your day with it.
I talk about active hope, that you know, we have hope. God gives us hope, but we have to do something. I always think about maintenance. It's maintenance. I don't think it's much different than our spiritual life. Yesterday's prayers won't work for today. I have to do daily maintenance of my spiritual to improve my conscious contact with God, as I understand. If we look at it more, but this is where I think God can reveal himself. Okay, here I was, homeless, jobless, when everybody's got their own story, struggling with this, struggling with that, and then seeing them prosper, seeing them do well. Mm. I mean, I get to see daily testimonies of how God works in people's lives.
Yeah.
That's part of it, mm-hmm. I think. That's why we had the struggle. Paul talks about the thorn. Overcoming, succeeding in spite of. Mm-hmm. And again, it's daily. It's as you move forward, then guess what? You get to start, hey, I recognize somebody else is struggling like I was. And then you get to pay it forward, pay it back. And I believe that's the whole sense of community and what God wants. And, you know, we see another, like the Good Samaritan, somebody struggling on the side of the street. Hey, you know, I kind of struggled with the same thing. You know, I did this and life got better.
Mm.
It opens up that channel, which, you know, it says God uses everything for our good, mm. even what the enemy tries to use to destroy, steal, and kill.
Mm-hmm.
He uses everything for our good. I think that's how he turns it around. Mm. I've seen it.
Yeah. Are you going to allow it to be used for the good?
Mm-hmm. Well,
and I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
The maintenance, too, is, you know, because sometimes I think we get stuck in the mental health. Mm-hmm. That sounds, for some reason, it's become a very scary term. Mm-hmm. Physical health has to be maintained. Like Bruce said, spiritual health has to be maintained. You know, we exercise and eat right to keep our body healthy. Sometimes we need to take medication to keep mm-hmm. our minds the way that we need them to be. We need to see a therapist to mm-hmm. help with any kind of thought processes we're having that aren't making sense for us. And so I think that maintenance piece is really important, looking at it more of that instead of this dark cloud that we will always be under.
I always challenge people. I came up with the acronym EGNOG. And when we think of our thoughts, are they exceptionally God-given or not of God?
Mm.
Yeah, I just use that because, I mean, you know, God wants our best. He wants right. us to yeah. live life in abundance. He wants our relationships to be vibrant. So if I'm having thoughts that are super negative and telling me otherwise, I'm pretty sure they're not of God.
Right. Mm. And that's funny. I say all the time, you know, God's never yelled at me.
Mm-hmm.
God's never raised his voice to me one time. And so when the voice in my head is, yeah, that's not our Heavenly Father. It's not how he talks to us. Well, mm-hmm. I want to thank you guys for being here. And I want to thank you for sharing hope. And at home, we actually wanted to share with you one more story. And if it's a story of a young lady in our church who experienced and is experiencing a mental health challenge. And in it, she has found freedom and she has found hope. And we hope you do as well. Check it out.
My name is Jess Pollard, and this is my story. My story starts in high school when I started noticing that something was wrong and that I just wasn't feeling like I should. And I tried to seek help, but I didn't really get a lot of help until my college days. It was a lot of brushing off my anxiety as needing to exercise more, drink more water when I knew that there was something else going on. But it wasn't till later in my college years when I really started to notice that I was having mood swings and everything was getting worse. I didn't really feel like I was in control. And that's when I really pursued getting help more. As far as I would have panic attacks, but the bigger thing was that I couldn't really verbalize what I was feeling. Sometimes I would be very, very depressed, and other times I would be very happy, motivated, but I never felt in control. I would snap over the littlest things and be very upset about it. And in the back of my mind, I knew that I was overreacting about something, but it was like I couldn't stop. I just couldn't really explain what was going on. I just knew I just couldn't control what was going through my head. When things got really bad, I finally decided about a month into this really bad depression that I needed to get help. So I made an appointment with my school counselor. But at that time, I still didn't really know that I was having trouble with mood swings. I didn't really identify that until later. So I sought help about my anxiety and my panic attacks, but there was still something else going on. But I tried to talk about it, but again, there was kind of a brush off about that everyone gets mood swings, everyone feels down sometimes. One of the biggest ups and downs that I remember from senior year was a vacation that my family took. It was a great vacation to Tennessee, but one night I snapped over something little, overreacted, and it was another one of those situations where I knew in the back of my head that I was being ridiculous, but I couldn't stop it. And I remember sobbing uncontrollably on the bathroom floor in the place that we were staying, and my mom trying to calm me down. And then it was like, I don't remember the rest. I don't know what happened. I don't know if I just went to sleep. I don't know how my mom or my sister calmed me down. But that's kind of a scary thing to think about, that I was so out of control. Like, I couldn't control what I was feeling, that I don't even remember it. Like, my brain almost blocked it out because it was so traumatic. And looking back, I can really see how that bipolar was affecting me before I even knew what it was. So junior year, I had been taking psychology classes that were basic psychology classes, and that's where I got more information about bipolar. And since I knew something wasn't right, I did a lot of research because I didn't know about it before. And so that's when I decided that I needed help, not only a counselor, but trying to pursue it with, first it was the nurse practitioner at Student Health, because that's where my counselor was. And then after being brushed off there, I finally went to my primary care doctor that summer. And he noticed that something was wrong. He started me on some medication. And it was a long journey of not only getting someone to believe that there was something else going on because I couldn't verbalize it well, but also getting medication straight, starting to see a psychiatrist. But when I started that, after I started having someone believe me, I felt that there was hope and that there was a light at the end of the tunnel. I didn't have to feel like this forever. And it had been a long time since I'd felt that way. So I had a lot of family members and friends who I knew they meant the best, but kind of told me that prayer was going to be what got me through. And it's not that prayer wasn't helpful, but I knew that it wasn't everything I needed. So it got very discouraging. And I wouldn't say I ever lost my faith, but I was very hopeless and I didn't understand why I was having to go through this and how to make it better. But after, when looking back, it's really made my faith stronger. Because I know I wouldn't be where I am today if it hadn't been for the Lord guiding me through it. I realized that God had a plan for everything, even down to I had to take an extra semester in school, which was heartbreaking for me. And then the next day, it was like I had a peace about it. So it was just down to everything I could tell. I started to be able to tell how he had his hands on everything and had a plan. Before this experience, I was very much a homebody, relying on my family a lot. And when I had to venture out and do this on my own as an adult, it kind of set me up for being able to move to a different city, like stay in the city that I had gone to school in, start my career, get my own apartment. So it wasn't easy at first, but it really did help set me up on the course that I'm on right now and has made me so much stronger because I know what I can get through and that I did this with the Lord by my side, that I can get through anything with him. So it's definitely hard to find out that there's something like bipolar going on, especially with the stigmas out there and so many people not knowing what it is. And it's kind of a fear. It's hard to not let it identify yourself, and it's a fear to let people know sometimes because of the stigma. But I have learned not to identify with it, that it doesn't define me, that it's just something that I have to deal with, and it's just a thorn in my side, and that it doesn't make me crazy, it doesn't make me weak, it makes me stronger, and that the Lord has brought me through this and given me a story to tell and a way to help other people. Because nobody should ever have to feel as hopeless as I felt at one point. And it is possible to get better with the right doctors, the right medications, even though it's a long journey and it's not easy to ask for help. It is possible. You don't have to feel bad for the rest of your life. You don't have to let it control you. My bipolar is not who I am. It doesn't define me. And if you are struggling with something like this today, I want you to know that it doesn't define you either.